Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. I am Mike Lewis. Drays is joining me. Drays, when you... Do you actually go... I haven't even asked you this. Let me back up a bit. Do you actually go out ever and have... I mean, at least before the most recent shutdown, go out and have a have dinner somewhere or have a drink somewhere in a restaurant that was, you know, so effectively socially distanced? Or was that just... Did you just sort of rule that out as soon as
you
the
know,
restrictions came down?
I'm more of an out. If there's something outside, you know, I might, you know what I mean? I might do it. I haven't done the igloo thing, and I want to at some point. But I just think it's cool, and it's a nice way to go on a nice little date. But, you know, I haven't done it. I want to do it. But, yeah, I'll go out, but not too much. Not much.
And what do you think about so the state, typically, what the Washington State Liquor Control Board, actually Liquor and Cannabis Control Board, does mm-hmm. In Washington State, is they're typically the ones who are out checking in on bars, making sure there's no underage serving, making sure there's no over-serving, making sure that bars are generally operating above board. They're doing the same with all the cannabis shops in Washington State. But as a result of the coronavirus, they've sort of had to take on the mantle of this additional work, the additional work being, are the bars following all the social distancing and spacing and occupancy protocols as handed down by the state and by the local health officials. And they kind of got the job because they were the ones already visiting all of the bars and restaurants. It's certainly the ones that were selling liquor or selling spirits of any selling beer or liquor. Mm-hmm. And as a result of this, they've ended up kind of on the pointy end of a bar owner, restaurant owner, you know, animosity, those who feel like the state is overreaching by really not just putting down standards, but enforcing those same standards. And what we had in Tacoma, the owner, Dana Slovak, the owner of Coco's Bartini in Kennewick, explained to Dory Monson what happened when some customers confronted the liquor board agents who had showed up to double check on reports that they were not doing the appropriate spacing and protocol.
We're just leaving. One of the guys told me I chased him down out of the parking lot. So he comes back and tells me about this. He follows them into the hotel parking lot across the street, confronts them. The liquor board asks, "Who are you?" The citizen goes, "No, who are you? And what are you doing? Leave them alone." And so they take off, and then another group follows them wherever they went. So I don't know what happened after that. I get there, and all these citizens are pouring up to the parking lot and are just, you know, going, "Where are they at? Where are they at? We'll build a wall right here so they can't come in." Well, I expected the liquor board to come back, but come to find out through my server, she said that, oh, they dropped the violation off. I read it, and it says I have a $500 fine, or I can close my doors down for 5 days.
And so, and he also then told Dory Monson Show that he was going to close, but his employees wanted him to stay open.
It wasn't my plan to shut down. Well, actually, it kind of was. It was my employees that said, "Dana, we got to stay open. We can't afford." I can't. One of my girls was like, "I can't afford to shut down and go back on unemployment. It doesn't pay nothing." So, you know, and then my chef the same way. He says, "Dana, I'm here. I got your back." So the whole team has got my back, and I said, "Okay, I'm going with this full bore. I'm pedal to the metal, and I'm not stopping."
So, when you listen to this you're on one end of this situation, and I'm potentially on the other as a business that actually got closed as a result of this because we don't have any outside seating. We can't really do anything other than what we do in a normal situation. How do you feel when you hear this? Do you feel like the business owner has got a legit complaint, or should people more toe the line when the liquor board shows up and says, "Hey, these things need to happen"?
You know, reading the article, I was just, and I still am, right? I still am where I am. I was really like, you know, dude, there are some rules in place for a reason right now, right? We're all trying to figure this out, and you're putting people in jeopardy. He's serving liquor. So people know the officers came by. He's serving liquor inside of his location. There are more people in there than there probably should be. And so they're going, "Hey, you can serve liquor from correct to go, but you can't serve the liquor there inside and have people drink. So he's doing that. He's breaking the rules. And he's done it multiple times. They've sent several officers to check up on him. So reading that, it's just kind of like, hey, man, what are you guys doing? I'm definitely not for people chasing the officers down. The officers are just doing their job, right? I mean, I'm coming here. Exactly. I'm told to come check on you. I check on you. I got to leave. I should not have people chasing me down. This thing in our culture right now where we're showing up to council members' homes and following officers home. And you know what I mean? Like, this is not the people versus the machine. This is the people out of control. No, you cannot do that. The guy's doing his job. There are protocols. You have to follow them. I do want to say one other thing, though. In hearing him talk, my heart bleeds for him because it's a man with a business. And I think about his workers, the people who work there. And what if someone's a single mother and doesn't know where they're going to get money? And like he said, you know, hey, unemployment's not going to pay enough. And what am I going to do? Right. It doesn't change what has to be done. It just sucks. You know, what do you think?
You know, this is a wow. I don't know if we have. If this were a 9-hour show, right, I could probably get through most of it. This is a very tough one because I'm actually on the pointy end of it right now. And so my biases are clear, although they're not. Actually, let me back that up. I have biases. I'm not sure where I stand on this. I actually am a firm believer that I believe in the science. I know that we know that while we're over-indexing on cleaning stuff and wiping things down, which doesn't really appear to be much of a vector for coronavirus, the breathing, the aerosol, it does appear to be, the droplets and whatnot that you're breathing out or sneezing out, that tends to be a real definite mover of this sort of thing. So, so you cannot take restaurants out of that equation. The Washington Hospitality Association really went after the governor saying that, hey, your own data shows that it's these other gatherings and not necessarily restaurants. I think the Washington Hospitality Association, I'm a member, it has a point, but here's where I think that there may be not sort of spot on, because I think our contact tracing has been so inconsistent and abysmal in this state. I don't know that we can say much of anything at all about we know how it spreads, where it specifically is spreading from. Every now and then we get good data. A lot of the data is a little bit flawed. So do we have to shut down and prevent a spread as it exists in restaurants? Well, yes. But here's the thing that bothered me the most. And I thought Danny Westneat in the Seattle Times framed this really nicely. The governor, when he put down the new regulations about the December 14th and shutting down, or through December 14th, and we all know, I don't think there's anyone in the restaurant industry in Washington State who expects the shutdown to end on December 14th. Literally, I don't know of a single soul, and I'm sure that those people in the governor's office know that that was just what they wanted to put out there, but it's really going to go through the new year. That said, I don't think that they should have acted as surprised by the immediate backlash on a lack of economic support as they were. They understood. I mean, everything that's happening now was completely predicted. Everything. From the science on the spread of it to the economic impact. We knew all of this, and yet we were prepared for only one end of it, which was the health. We were not prepared on the economic end. And to watch Colorado put $1 billion out there to help businesses, and Washington State initial offer was $50 million, which comes out to, I don't know, a couple hundred bucks a business. It was offensive. It was like, you guys just decided we're not even dealing with this because we just don't. And then when they got slapped on this, then they ramped it up to like $150 million, which is still deeply inadequate. The city of Seattle comparatively did more for businesses with this $10,000 grant, although that one's going to be questionable because you apply for it now and then you find out at the end of January whether or not you got it. Which is a long time, and businesses are going to close in that interim period. It's a $10,000 grant. But at least the city of Seattle put money out there immediately. The state was – so where do I stand on this, I guess, is your question, right? And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be ranting about this.
Where do you lean? I know you don't stand anywhere. Where do you lean?
I lean on I'm happy to close. I am unhappy at the lack of support to do so without laying a bunch of people off and people going out of business. I think that they should have had both pillars in place before enacting either thing. Right? That's what I think.
You know, where I'm from, what we call what you just did a mic drop. Very well put, brother.
They just didn't. Well, and that's the thing that's frustrating. And you want to know why this guy, I mean, I don't know that Dana Slovak and I have a thing in common. And certainly I wouldn't name my bar Bartini. But I would say that that he's I can see his frustration. I completely empathize with. Like, I get it, and I can see why your staff right now making a pittance on unemployment, if they're even getting it, if they can even get through the system. And that's the other thing. And this is what drives me bananas. The fact that no one in employment security has been fired over the state's egregious handling of the unemployment system is appalling. It's nothing short of that. This is inexcusable. We knew all this stuff was happening. The governor literally set the dates of the closure and when this purported reopening, which isn't going to happen. All of that happened, and yet they were prepared for one element, which was to tell us how to close, and no elements on to tell us how to survive.
You know what, Mike? I'm over here smiling because I've never heard this type of passion out of you. I'm loving this, man. This is awesome. Like, just hearing how fired up you are about this, I can tell this absolutely hits home. I can tell that
there is
it's personal, right?
It's extremely personal, and it's extremely personal when you deal with these folks every day. And you see I mean, I get it. I understand that we need to do our part. And I was actually, and I guess what you're hearing, you're not just hearing frustration of someone who owns a business. You're hearing frustration of someone who actually buys in, has bought in and done the right things all the way through the pandemic. Someone who literally was like on the governor's side, you know, on this stuff. And it's like, it feels like he's just pushing people like me away because we actually do want to do the right thing, but we cannot get him to do the right thing for us as well.
It's I'll say this quickly. I saw a post from a woman yesterday who was essentially saying, you know, she was trying to go to the DMV and the DMV was not giving her ID quick enough. Yada, yada. It was going to be really slow. And she was frustrated because she was trying to get a job and the job's not going to wait 45 days for her to get her ID. And you know what I mean? She lost one job. She's got kids to feed. And she's like, listen, I'm not broke. I'm not trying to lean on the system. I just want to work and I can't. And it's frustrating because, like you said, I leaned on this system and I'm doing things the right way, but I need you guys to work with us and do things the right way. And she really harped on the kind of the inadequacy, the idiocy of the way things are being handled. And I feel like it's the same. I know hers was more personal, but it's the same frustration, it sounds like, for businesses where it's like, yeah, you did a great job for health, but what about the business, right? Like, what about us? There are mouths to feed. There's a lot that still has to happen here. And it doesn't sound like things have been well thought
out. You know what's also a health effect? Is getting kicked out of your apartment.
Yeah.
You know, there's a health effect associated with that, too. And I know that we have this moratorium on evictions in place. It's not a moratorium on collections, right? Yeah. This stuff is just spooling. This debt is just growing out there, and it's going to crush some people. There is zero doubt about that. Now, there are people out there who have really kind, really or capable. It's not even a matter of kind. Let's like take kind out of it because there are landlords also on the hook. The fact is, as a nation, what we didn't do was go straight to the holders of the note, right? That's what we needed to do. What we did do was go to people on the bottom end of the equation and not require, you know, all that money, all that paycheck protection money, all of the money that we helped passes through us back to the banks. So why didn't we just go to them? Why didn't we do that? Why didn't the state just say, you know what we're going to do is we're going to allow businesses to not pay excise taxes for a month. What happens then? Well, so we are the collection agency for sales taxes, right? That's what we do as part of a business. That 10% that I'm collecting every month is then remanded to the state. That is literally not even my property. It's their property under law. I get it. I don't mind. But we are actually the collection stream for them. So what you can do is say, well, we've already got that money in our account. Let's just say it's 10%. So $40,000 in sales in a month, you have $4,000 sitting there, right? Just tell me, hey, Mike, in November, keep that $4,000. That's actual money. That's actually going to go toward my lease. That's money. And what the state didn't have to do, they didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to remove. They didn't have to send that money back to me. They didn't have to process a check. They didn't have to put it through employment security and have it disappear in there or go straight to Nigeria. They actually had a chance to just say, you don't pay it for a month on a month of actual sales. Now, if they if they do the great ironic thing of saying you don't owe excise taxes in a month of no sales, well, okay, then I get it. Ha ha, joke's on me. But But the fact is they had all these opportunities to do something very, very simple that involved very low touch that would have been actual money actually helping. And the state declined.
Wow.
There you go.
I'm floored. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, my frustration is obviously real, and it's very, very personal for me. But my frustration is real, and I'm actually going to try to find a way to limp through this whole situation and keep a business open. But there are a lot of people who are not going to be able to, from business owners to employees, all over this place, who are not getting helped, who are not able to log in to the employment security system and even get just that little bit of money that they could get. Because the state can't, and I can understand it. It completely makes sense. I agree with everyone at the state level who seems to think we have no actual tech industry in this state. We could not possibly have the expertise in Washington State to be able to manage millions of transactions electronically. Certainly we can't. I mean, it's not like we have a giant online retailer in this state that actually does exactly this all the time. Certainly we don't have the expertise to be able to actually manage an employment security system. Certainly not.
Hey, man, I'm kicking back because I'm like, I'm loving hearing you just go off. This is classic, man. This is way too classic.
Now I forgot who our sponsor is.
I love it.
Welcome back. Tom and Curly Show. I very nearly said Cairo Knights. Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. I'm Mike Lewis. I'm joined with Dre's. We are going to, before I get too far into this, one, our text line is 989-73. Please text us in. Tell us what you think about the show on this Black Friday. And also, this hour of the Tom and Curly Show is brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. Dre's, so when I suggested that we talk about this on the show, I know that sometimes I bring this up, and immediately people just start scooching their chair away from me, or they start, you know, like ignoring me, or they say, oh, well, I got to get this, got to get my phone. They don't want to talk about this, but I think this is a pretty interesting subject, and here is why. So this is about essentially the U.S. code that regulates internet companies and has allowed them to get so big. It is called Section 230. Trust me, you're going to be hearing a ton about this through the next year, next couple of years, because it's probably going to be one of the biggest, most expensive fights that's going to happen in Congress, and here's what it is. Essentially, Section 230 is the law that allows Facebook and Twitter, it allows Parler and Instagram, it allows all of them to function as what's referred to as a platform and not a publisher, and that means that they are not held liable for what is published on their platform like a publisher would be. Let's just say you're a newspaper and you publish something libelous. You could actually be held liable and you can pay out a lot of money. And in fact, Gawker Media nearly went under when they lost a lawsuit to Hulk Hogan. That's the type of thing that could happen to a media company, but can't happen to Facebook. So this is actually right now being considered for rewrite for different. Democrats want to rewrite it. Republicans want to rewrite it. Biden and Trump actually agree on this thing, except for very, very different reasons. Dre's, what do you think about this idea of how much liability should Facebook carry around when it allows this sort of open discourse on any number of subjects?
Man, I am really on the fence on this one because it just goes to the core. First off, they're really not, by definition, they're not publishers, right? They're not publishers. When I put a post together from the comfort of my own home and I watch my wife pull in a sweet potato pie out the oven and I put it online, they are not publishing that. I'm publishing that, right? And so I understand what people want. We've created a monster and we're trying to figure out how to get around these issues where you have fake posts, you have negative posts, but you start finding yourself going, all right, well, you want to turn these people into, I don't know. Like, you want them to start policing every single thing, right? So they're monitoring everything that comes online. Well, now you start, if that goes too far, you can start getting into freedoms and into, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. So let me ask you another question, because here is one of the areas that I think is really interesting. A couple of smart people have been talking about on how you can modify this. Because I think you're right.
Okay.
There, if someone doesn't, If someone does that, if you put the sweet potato pie on Instagram, that is you actually publishing that on their platform. They give you open place to put it. You drop it in there. But how about this? So when you do post it, and the Instagram has this algorithm that shares that, I mean, intentionally shares that with everyone who has ever mentioned either hating or loving sweet potato pie. And that immediately fans out to millions of people as a result to then, one, spread your information, but also to give them more sort of reach for their advertising, which they are pinning on top of it. They're making money on it. When they write that algorithm, are they still as protected, you think, as they are when they just provide you with a simple publishing platform?
Again, I don't know. This is fascinating. It's a great question because maybe that part, now they are now participating.
Bingo.
Right? Me publishing and just putting something up and it naturally being seen by my family and friends who are followers, etc. But the minute they start pulling it via my hashtag and sending it to XYZ or however, right, their algorithm begins to move things around. Yeah, now they're doing some work, and so they may have a responsibility to kind of account for what they're getting behind and what they're pushing out there. I don't know though, because I still have my concerns. It's like, well, what is harmful? Like a little kid twerking, is that harmful? Right? A man on there lying to his wife, is that harmful? Right? Like where do we draw the line? I know it's easy for people to go to this extreme where they're like, fake news. I'm like, okay, well, what is fake news, right? You know what I
mean? Right,
But
you're asking all the right questions, right? I mean, this is what we have to, and what you could also say, I think with some certainty, is that, so, you know, here's the, you know, I always struggle with this because are we going to, I mean, I always question myself when I'm feeling like I'm saying things that are kind of just rooting for the home team. And I don't know that we would be as much of a leader on internet-based technologies worldwide if we didn't have this sort of like Wild West, right? And that's actually literally the name of a newsletter done by a local guy, Eli Sanders, that actually focuses on this very issue, because the internet has kind of been Wild West in terms of privacy, in terms of its reach, in terms of the spread of information and disinformation, all of that stuff. And we've sort of always been hands off, and the internet companies have always said, hey, you know, look how giant we are and how much billions of dollars we're acquiring.
Yeah.
How is that possibly a bad thing? And it turns out, well, it's not an easy answer. It's a good thing to have business and a lot of people making good money, but how are they making that money and who are they getting that money from?
See, my thought is, how is it possible for them to even do this? Like, there are so many people on social media posting so many times.
Right.
I could post 15 times today if I wanted to, right? I could go live. What do they do about going live, right?
Like, right. You know,
so now someone's going live, and the way this algorithm works as well with all of social media is whatever their new thing is, if you use it more, it'll show it to more people, right?
Right,
so Reels,
right?
Reels is the new thing on Instagram. They're trying to get people using them. If you use those right now, you'll get way more reach. Strangers you don't even know will start liking your content, following you, stuff like that. But what do you think? Like, because this is, where do you think the lines are with this?
I like the idea. I don't like the idea of I can be convinced that they are a platform and not a publisher. As someone who came from newspapers and knowing that literally I've had stories that had to go through lawyers before they were published because we wanted to make sure that we weren't held liable. But that also forces you into a much higher standard of what is actually true and provable and what isn't. If you have that sort of thing attached to you.
What would you allow Facebook to be liable for if someone posted it? Like, let's say 230 gets abolished, and now these people are now treated as a publisher and not a platform. What would you hold them liable for?
So here's the thing, and this is where I think I'm going for. I'm not sure I would hold them liable for anything, but what I would hold them liable for is simply the algorithm, right? Because this is where they're making that extra money on your sweet potato pie. When they decide that they go there and that thing gets fanned out to everyone who has said something. Remember, those suggestions you're getting on Facebook and Instagram, those are things that you have either reacted negatively to or positively to, but you've reacted to. And that's the way they get that spreading out there. When we all started on social media, It was just our friends, and then it would be then you someone some old high school flame would hunt you down, and you know, and all that kind of stuff would happen. That's not it anymore. Yeah. That's not it anymore at all. It they have gotten extremely sophisticated when they suggest to you, like, hey, so and so posted a picture. They actually know what your interactions with that person were for a period of time, and their algorithms are gamed to do that. What did that one person really smart in that the Social Dilemma documentary? She referred to algorithm is a code with an opinion,
right?
And that's a smart way to put it. So maybe you regulate the algorithm that is doing the fanning and spreading because they're making loads of money on that spread because that spreads their reach.
Okay, so let's say this. All right, so that's what they're supposed to do. I'm trying to dial this down.
Fair enough.
Where is the censorship? Is there a censorship issue here for you?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not worried. They're private companies. They've always been able to censor. They sort of don't want to because that destroys their own reach and their own like credibility to their fan group. That's why you have a Parler existing because a bunch of conservatives felt like Twitter wasn't allowing them free reign. And so that Parler then erupts out of that. That's maybe the marketplace that should exist, right? I mean, maybe that's the way things ought to happen. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I would say how I want to restrict them. What I would want to do is how they're gaming the system to create viral content. I mean, they've made us buy in. Like if you have a social media post that goes viral, you're rarely unhappy about that unless it was something somebody posted about you. Right.
Right.
And so.
Go ahead.
No. Well, I mean, I think that I like the conversation because I'm not certain where I stand on this. I mean, feel like there is something going on here that maybe should be dialed back. In all cases, when we were giving land grants to the railroad companies to build a national railway system, which actually happened as a result of those land grants, even though that was the greatest land giveaway in U.S. history. Then we started dialing it back and not doing that anymore. Once we had that thing established, and maybe we're now at that phase two where we start turning the rheostat down and saying, all right, you guys are established. You're billion-dollar companies. Let's make this a little bit more manageable and a little bit more sane, and you guys don't get a chance to make money on every little thing that happens in your social media. We're not going to give you that platform. Maybe that's what we need to do.
What is the post? What are the examples? Why do they want to do this? Why do we want to make this change? Is there something? What are the types of posts that are bothering us and saying these types of things should not be, they shouldn't be on social media? Because from what I know right now, if it's X-rated content, it gets removed. I think we all agree with that. What's moving this?
Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. I'm Mike Lewis here with Dres. Dres, are you a watcher of Jeopardy?
Off and on. Yeah.
Not super committed. So I got to say, I kind of have jumped in and jumped out. I've got a lot of friends who are pretty passionate about it. I also am not a person who spends a lot of time on watching game shows, even though this is a good one, and I liked Alex Trebek a lot. Well, you folks all know in November, Alex Trebek died, and it's been a search for his replacement on the show that is really so closely associated with him. The guy who was selected, at least on an interim basis, is Seattle's Ken Jennings, who is considered the greatest ever Jeopardy contestant, and he's a likable guy. They've decided, well, maybe Ken is the guy to come on the show and take the mantle from Alex. Now, they decided on an interim basis and not on a full-time basis. They might be trying other people out, but at least that's what the show producers have said at this particular point. But he has been catching some flack from some old tweets, jokes he's been made on Twitter from a few years ago. And before we get into that, let's play a little bit of sound from him. This is him talking to Rachel Bell about being on Jeopardy 75 times. Alex Trebek ran out of things to ask him during the little chit-chat segment at the beginning of the show.
I remember one time he just got fed up and he was like, Ken, is there anything you want to ask me? And I had no idea this was coming. You know, I hemmed and hawed for, it seemed like forever, 10 seconds. And I finally said, well, what did you have for breakfast this morning, Alex? And I'll never forget what he said to me. A Diet Pepsi and a Baby Ruth.
What? That is so unexpected.
The breakfast of champions.
And so he actually is going to be clever. People have been kind of excited about this, but now a couple of tweets, and they're bad jokes, maybe jokes slightly in poor taste. One about the, the saddest person you can see is someone trapped in a wheelchair on a hot day or something along those lines, and then some other joke along those lines, and people are now starting to
nothing sadder than a hot person in a wheelchair.
Yes, nothing sadder than a hot person in a wheelchair. So when those tweets resurface, now people are expressing some consternation about that. At least internet people, maybe not people, but someone out there on the internet. How do you feel about your internet past coming back to haunt you, Dres? And do you think that that's appropriate in this sort of circumstance?
This is so whack. Like 2014. Come on, guys. It's 2020. Like, he's apologized. He said I said something stupid. I hurt people. I made them angry. I know we love to psychoanalyze everyone and go, he's not serious. You don't know if he's serious. That's the truth. You don't know and I don't know. So you give the person the benefit of the doubt. Let's take it, let's make it simple and easy, right? He said something back in 2014. It was a tweet. It was stupid. He said it. It was harmful. Okay, so we got to move on, man. I mean, the way I feel is everyone's got some of this, man. Everyone's got some of this. We start combing through everyone's backyard, man. You know what I mean?
No, like, totally.
There's got to be something. I don't know which way you bend. Maybe you don't like cotton or you don't like satin, but there's something who you're going to offend someone. So.
Yeah, I completely agree. And on top of that, just because you may have said it or laughed at it and you didn't put it on Twitter does not mean that you haven't done it, right? I mean, the problem sometimes is we're over-indexing on the people who've actually put it on Twitter and not the people who've done it, but maybe it's just not searchable on the internet easily from someone's desk somewhere.